This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest today is a legendary sports businessman who prides himself on turning losing teams into winning teams. He's part owner of multiple sports organizations and is the former president of the Utah Jazz and the New York Knicks. He founded the WNBA's New York Liberty and MLS's Real Salt Lake. Dave Chekits joins us on Sports Jam. Dave, thanks for coming on the show.
Doug, it's great to see you. I hope that all the way through this, I call you Doug properly and not Billy, because all I can see is Billy.
That's another homage to you and your times at the Garden. I'm wearing a Billy Joel t-shirt for you. I have other references for you, my Salt Lake City hat and my New York Liberty jersey behind me. Now, your son Nate joined us on Sports Jam back in 2015, and we talked about Roan, and we'll talk more about your wonderful family a little bit later in the show. Dave Chekits, along with the Eccles family of Utah, are combining to create a sports-focused private equity fund that plans to invest more than $1.2 billion. It's called the Sinosure Chekits Sports Capital Fund. The fund is meant to target investments across several elements of the sports industry, including teams, leagues, facilities, technology, and media ventures, as well as other specific investments pursuits. The Sinosure Chekits Sports Capital Fund will have offices in New York City and in Salt Lake City. And before we get into the new venture, Dave, I got to ask you about the Knicks playoff run so far.
Brunson kicks it out, and an Obi corner three. Rebound Brunson. Back up, bang shot is good. Brunson and Tatum throwing haymakers at each other. Oh, good defense from White, but Brunson still looking. Falling away, puts it up. That's good. Jalen Brunson does it again. It's a two-point game. Drives into the paint, pulls back, looks up at the shot clock. He's got to get it off. Falling away, puts it up. Puts it in. A Brunson barrage.
How closely have you been following what's going on at your old home, Madison Square Garden?
Oh, heavens. I mean, very closely. I loved what Mike Breen said in the broadcast in the last game, when he said if the Knicks win this game, which would have put them up 3-1 at the time, he said it'll be the most important win in 25 years. And I realized that the last time the Knicks had made the Eastern Finals was in the year 2000. And, you know, that was my second to last year running the Knicks. I was also in charge of the 2000-2001 season, which was rather forgettable. We went out in the first round. But in 99, when we went to the NBA Finals against San Antonio, beating Indiana in the Eastern Finals, and then again in 2000, getting back to the Eastern Finals, I mean, those were just great days, and I'm really happy for Tom Thibodeau, who worked for us back in those that time, and everybody that's affiliated with the team. Rick Brunson was on our club back then, and now his boy is the point guard and the best player. And so it's just fun to watch.
Fantastic. And what a run they've had so far. You've always been able to create friendships and partnerships that have led to success, like the late David Stern, the former NBA commissioner. And your relationship with Spencer Eccles goes back a long way. What do you think your best quality is as a businessman, especially when it comes to the sports sector?
Wow, Doug, you're starting out with the heavy questions right up front. But that's a really great question. I do think it is the value that I put in other people. My father was quite a businessman. He was a salesman, mostly. During my childhood, he sold everything. You name it, he was selling it. He sold cash registers. I mean, that was what you put in stores during those days to check people out, a cash register that would ring everything up. And then he went to work selling these constructed canopies that you put on used car lots to cover the car inventory. And then he started selling something. This was probably his favorite thing. He sold something called mobile homes. which is a trailer, basically, sometimes up to 70 feet long and a couple of bedrooms. And that trailer was something that someone who was having a hard time buying a house may well be able to afford. And I worked for him. I was a service manager. And his favorite thing, Doug, favorite thing of all, was to back that trailer into a lot at a mobile home lot, to take the wheels off, fasten it down, put an air conditioner, an air cooler on top. And they had a roof over their heads. That family had a roof over their heads. And my dad, he didn't take out a lot of advertising, but the place where he sold trailers was called Clyde's Mobile Homes. And Clyde's Mobile Homes, he actually had a tagline before taglines were very important. And his tagline, this is too long a story, Doug, sorry.
No, it's great.
His tagline was Clyde's Mobile Homes, where every person is important. And I took a lot away from that. I felt like the ushers at Madison Square Garden were important. I felt like the food workers, those people were important. They were the people that treated your customers. And if you treated them well, they would treat your customers well. If you took care of them, they would take care of the people that were paying out so much money. And so I learned a great lesson at a young age that in business, people are really, really important, and tried to feel that way and emulate that when it came to players or coaches or, I mean, they're people trying to do their best, trying to make a living, trying to take care of the people they love. And they're not that different than the ushers. It's just that they had a special talent that allowed them to get themselves in a position to really succeed and lots of pressure. So I loved that time at the Garden and have loved it ever since in sports.
It kind of reminds me, because it's such a successful motto that your dad had. Another businessman in sports who happened to be one of the greatest hockey players, if not the greatest, Mario Lemieux. They say the same thing about Mario, that he treats everyone when he came to the arena the same way, whether it be the towel boy to the top star on the team. And it's a great way to live. It's a great way to run a business and to run a sports team. And both of you have had great success when it comes to that. Now, also, U.S. sports organizations are becoming much warmer now to private equity money. Can you first explain for the Sports Jam audience a little more about private equity and how it works in this current sports landscape?
So private equity is oftentimes, most of the time, capital that gets invested in a particular fund. There are fiduciaries, to use a big word, or general partners who manage that money for someone else. So they make an investment in a fund, and then the private equity managers or leaders or general partners find opportunities to invest that money in certain industries. And usually, in order to invest in particular industries, they seek out some industry expertise. If they're going to invest in oil and gas or real estate or sports teams or sports assets, they seek out people who understand those assets, and they try to invest the money into places where over time it will lead to a nice return on invested capital. And private equity's done very well in this country and has raised, as you know, billions and billions of dollars, has changed industries, has improved service in industries where needs to be. And it's made it possible for people to invest without necessarily, being billionaires.
Yeah, and your capital fund is investing in pro and college sports teams, sports leagues, governing bodies, stadiums, arenas, other sports facilities, sports technology, innovation companies, media rights, and broadcasting ventures. I want to dip into sports broadcasting a little. Sports Network, something you know a great deal about. You were president and CEO of Madison Square Garden from 94 to 2001, which included the Knicks, Rangers, the Liberty, MSG Networks, and Radio City Music Hall. It's a difficult and unstable situation now for sports networks and the industry. What are you looking to do in that space?
Well, I think it's a place, Doug, where disruptors are needed because, look, the old standard model of going in and turning on the television and hooked up to a cable system or a satellite system that allows you to get certain channels like MSG and ESPN and all of the places you can get sports. Those that there's something going on that's been going on a while called cord cutting, which means that the people no longer have that cord running into their house from the street someplace, which is a direct line from the cable provider or the direct TV provider, and instead they're hauling a screen into their house, hooking that up under the guidance of a local or an in-house Wi-Fi, and they're streaming those games. It's left these networks, Doug, almost bankrupt in many cases. So many of them, Diamond Sports that had all of the baseball teams, even MSG has suffered some bankruptcy type results, and Sports Network New York, which has the Mets and the Nets, is now for sale. It's for sale because people are finding other ways, lower cost ways, to watch television and to watch games. Sports is still the most valuable inventory that you can have on a network because it has to be viewed live. I mean, we can all decide to watch after we come home from work at 10 p.m. and hope that we don't hear a score on the way home, or that you walk in and your wife says, "Did you see the Knicks score? Did you?" I mean, you try to avoid all of that, but it's not the same as watching live. So sports has still got tremendous appeal live, and I think as a fund, we're going to watch for the opportunities, places to invest. ESPN now is about to go direct to consumer. Not they're not going to focus so much on cable or satellite, although they'll still provide their programming there, but it's going to be direct to the consumer. They're going to focus on that and package that, continue to package it with Disney and Hulu and try to get a marketing edge that way.
Funny that you mentioned. I know you're very much into soccer and have been a huge part of the whole soccer, both here in the U.S. and in the U.K. My son-in-law Joe, he's a big Arsenal fan now, and he's got us watching these games. And we were watching it after he came home from work. So I was headed to his house, and didn't you know, I turned on, the radio, and I got the score, and I was like. And when I got there, I had to pretend like I didn't know what happened in the game. It was so hard, Dave. And I felt bad because he was rooting so hard for them to win, and they end up losing that game. And I knew it. Even when there was a goal that was disallowed, he was waiting for the replay, and I knew it wasn't going to count. And I just had to sit there and pretend that I didn't know what was going on. And you're right, that's not the way we want to watch sports. We definitely want to watch it live. You've been a huge leader in basketball, soccer, women's sports. What leagues are you hoping to invest in now?
Well, we're looking to invest wherever the opportunities are. Leagues have certain rules about ownership, limitations on the amount of private equity in any franchise. I don't think we will be competing with those funds that invest in franchises where, they put in almost a debt-like instrument so that the owners of teams that have escalated in value can take out money to do things like estate planning or to buy another house, whatever they want to do with it. I think we're going to be more like investing alongside of owners as their partners, perhaps in their television property, perhaps in their real estate, perhaps in the technologies that underlie professional sports, college sports, women's sports. These are the places where I've just spent loads of time, and where you have good teams in good markets with good operators. I think you'd be foolish not to believe that they will continue to escalate in value, and that that would be a good place to put investors' money.
I've heard you talk a little bit about how the MLS still has a lot of catching up to do with places like the Premier League, who you're involved in, the Champions League, La Liga. It goes on and on. The quality of play is certainly different. Is that simply bringing in better talent for people in their prime? And I know that you had mentioned about the leagues maybe changing their calendar schedule and how that may impact things. Where are we with soccer right now?
Well, Doug, before I try to answer that, I should tell you, I owned an MLS team from 2005 to 2013, Real Salt Lake. I built the stadium in Salt Lake City. We won the MLS Cup in 2009, beating David Beckham's Galaxy team in Seattle.
This is MLS Cup 2009. It features the LA Galaxy, who have won it on two previous occasions, 2002 and 2005. And it also features Real Salt Lake in their fifth year of existence. This is the farthest that they have ever come. They're competing for the Philip Entschärft Trophy to be champions of Major League Soccer. Robbie Russell, meanwhile, no goals all season, but he could get a big one right here. Russell.
I'm really proud of that club. Real Salt Lake is now owned by the Miller family, and they were many years the stewards of the Utah Jazz. I actually found Larry Miller and brought him into the Jazz, and he owned the Jazz for 34 years. But they sold the Jazz to Ryan Smith, and now they're investing in soccer, and they're standing by to invest in Major League Baseball too, which we hope they can get a club if Major League Baseball wants to expand. But you ask about soccer, and I will tell you that my opinion is that Major League Soccer really needs to seriously consider moving their calendar to the same as the rest of the world of soccer. Even though that will mean they'll play in some cold weather in the US, it just means so much to not be sending your guys out to international play all the time during the season in games that you have to have. So that's one thing. I think the second thing is they need a television deal that will give them more revenue so that they can bring in more talent. And that financially, that those teams will continue to grow in value.
It's a very tenuous time because people love soccer now. I mean, I've heard you make a great point. It's got to be to a time where at 9:30 in the morning, people want to tune in to watch soccer like they do with Premier League and things like that. And it's a great point that you made there. When it comes to, some of these other sports that you're investing in, college sports. This whole thing with, the fact that players are getting paid and taking bids now from private equity firms, are you happy where the college sports is right now? For me, I think while I understand why players need to get paid, it's made a mess of the college sports world. I just don't see it the same way that I used to, and when you start hearing that players are getting paid more in college than maybe their first couple of years in the pros, that really makes you think a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's crazy, but it's happening. And the question is, can capital, meaning money coming in, could it help fix that? What do I mean? I mean, is it possible that if a private equity fund is going to own part of a conference, the Big Ten, the SEC, they're gonna pay them a load of money to own 20 or 30% of the conference? Does that also mean that they could collectively bargain with the players and get requirements that they go to school, that they actually graduate from school, that they take school seriously, that they don't, that it's not one and done? We'll pay you. These NILs will continue. You'll have a chance to make money. But if you're coming here, it's not one and done. You gotta play 2 or 3 or even 4 years if you're gonna get paid from us, because the quality of the games will be better, the quality of the talent will be better. Now look, the NCAA tournament was fabulous. I mean, it was fantastic. And it always is, but it's not the same as when you see a kid who came as a freshman, started playing a freshman point guard, and by his senior year, I mean, he's ready for the pros. But now he's imagine if Cooper stayed at Duke for a couple more years, what that would mean to Duke fans. That's what I think we're missing more than anything else.
Under a minute here at Clemson, stolen away by Cooper Flagg. And Flagg ahead of the field slams it with two hands.
So now he's going off to be a member of the Dallas Mavericks, which in one way I get it. He deserves the chance to do that, but he could have made really good money on NILs in the NCAA and in the ACC. There's opportunities to keep those kids. It's really only basketball and football that this matters in, but the money that would come in will make all of the sports, I think, have better facilities and probably be able to keep and develop better players.
Well, that's certainly good news. I hope it certainly does help. Many people have said Ohio State basically had the most money invested in their football team, and they end up winning the national championship as a result of it. I want to talk about the family. Currently, you're the managing partner of Checkett's Partners Investment Management, a private equity firm focused on sports, media, and entertainment. And the funds are under the management, holding significant stakes in Gravity Media. And then there's the sports and entertainment industry. Roan Apparel, who I mentioned, your son Nate came on Sports Jam and talked about it in 2015. The Checkets family, run by your sons Nate and Ben, when it comes to Roan, and your daughter Lily Shimbashi, who is doing amazing things as well. She founded Sports Ish, a sports media outlet that is in the business of both creating and empowering female fans. I imagine you are just so proud of your kids.
You know what? Everybody asks me how this happened, Doug, and I say, you got to meet my wife. I mean, I wish I could take any credit for this. Deb is really, I mean, we met in high school. She's such a special person, but she would not let those kids, dog it. She tried to instill a lot of motivation in them. Nate and his brother Andrew and his youngest brother Ben started a boys' camp in our backyard when they were like 12. And they would bring these little kids in the summer, ages 4 to 7. They would come into our backyard and they would play sports with the big boys. They would go swimming. They would do treasure hunts. And Doug, these camps became so popular that people were fighting to get their children in them. After one summer, I said to Nate, I said, you know what? I need to see how much money you guys are making. And because they were buying things like crazy. And I actually couldn't believe it. But my sons also, after 1 year of college, they left and would go on a church mission for Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They would be called, actually, Lily did this as well. They would leave and go somewhere in the world, anywhere that they were asked to go, to actually help people live better lives and help refugees and do all kinds of service. And you have to pay your own expenses when you go there. And all of my boys paid for their 2 years of service in Rome, in Mexico, in London, from their earnings from Boys World of Adventure. So I give their mom a lot of credit.
That's amazing. One of your biggest accomplishments, people don't talk about too much. First of all, I love the town that you were born in, Bountiful, and you went to high school there. You had a bachelor's degree from the University of Utah, and you received your MBA degree from BYU. But you didn't make it on your high school basketball team, even though you love playing basketball. I think one of your biggest accomplishments, you made the team at BYU as a walk-on on the basketball team.
Yeah. You know what, Doug? That gave me so much confidence because I was really, really young for my age. So when I got into my sophomore year, even though I had played in junior high school and had started both years, eighth and ninth grade, and I thought I was a good player, my older brother was on the team that won the state championship at Bountiful High School. And he was young in his grade too, but my body just was growing more slowly. And the other problem I had, frankly, is that my older brother wasn't easy to coach. And he and the head coach at Bountiful High School kind of got into this. So when I got there, I knew I had a strike against me. I got cut the first day of sophomore tryouts. I couldn't believe it. I cried buckets of tears. So the summer in between my junior and my sophomore and junior year, I went to every basketball camp. I actually got honored in the Jack Gardner University of Utah basketball camp in between my years. And I went to tryouts again, all these great aspirations, and I got cut again on the first day. And again, at that time I went and saw the coach and he said, "Look, you know what's gone on here. You know what I dealt with your brother. If you want to play, you're going to have to go to a different high school." And all my friends, all my buddies were at that school. So I completely changed my emphasis. I got involved in debate and student government. I became an officer at the school. I actually participated in theater, believe it or not. And then when I went to BYU, my first day, I went to see the coach and I said, "Look, I know I can play. I was not given a fair shake, and here's why." And by the way, it helped that I was 6'5" then. I was, I'd been a guard as a sophomore, but I was more like a forward, a big forward for our school by then. And this coach at BYU said, "You know what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to let you start working out with the team right away. I can't coach anybody. And tryouts are October 15th. Go lift, go scrimmage with the team, and we'll have tryouts. We'll invite anybody, but there's only two slots left on the team. And we'll invite everybody to come and try out, and we'll see how you do." Without belaboring this point, Doug, I played better in those tryouts than I'd ever play. I just had so much confidence that somebody had given me a chance. And I'd been working with the first team guys every day since August. And I got one of those slots on the team. I made the team.
That's a great story. I wish my story would end similar. I got cut right after making the winter squad at Penn State on the baseball team, and I was cut 2 days before the season started. So that was my biggest disappointment in sports. Before I let you go, then one other question. Deb has played such a huge role in both your life and your family. If you could go back in time, in a way back machine, to one sporting event, you could take her to one sporting event from many years ago or recently. What would it be and why?
Well, it's a sporting event that didn't happen. Is that okay?
Sure.
I want to take her to game seven of the Knicks Houston in Houston in 1994. I want to take her to the game. I want to still be president and CEO of Madison Square Garden and the Knicks. But this time, Doug, if I could repeat this, I'm going to say, honey, sit down. I'll be right back. And I'm going to go in the locker room and tell Pat Riley, look, if Starks is off, if Starks is not shooting the ball well, this is game seven. We got a chance to win the world title. We're a better team than them. But I don't know why I have this feeling, but John might be off. You got Rolando Blackman on the bench. You got Hubert Davis on the bench. You could play Derek Harper at two for all that matters. Pat, I know he got us here, but if he's not on, don't leave him out there. Because, as you know, he went 3 for 11. He went 3 for 18 and 1 for 11 in the fourth quarter.
John Starks for three cannot get off. Starks is now 1 for 11. Up front, Olajuwon lost his balance. Here comes Anthony. Starks again for three. I don't know, Matt, you reach a point as Olajuwon was back down court. And a 20th can come up with 5 minutes to go in the fourth. Anthony for Starks shooting again. Starks is now 1 for 13. 3:35 to go in the fourth. Starks that time hesitated. He had the shot. Ewing comes up short. Rebound Starks. John Starks. Controlled by the Knicks. Starks again for three. And a foul against the Knicks. The Houston Rockets are the 1993-94 NBA champions.
Now, I love John. I love John. He's one of the great players I've ever been around. I really love him, but I wish Pat would have made a change. And by the way, when Pat went into the Hall of Fame, I was there because Ewing was going in the same day. And I gave Pat a hug and I wished him well, even though, we didn't part the best of friends when he went to Miami. But he said to me, I'm sorry. And I said, you mean about the way you left? And he said, no, I'm sorry I left John in the game.
It both bugged you to this day, probably, when it comes to that. Well, Knicks fans are certainly hoping that Jalen Brunson doesn't have one of those nights because he has been spectacular. You talked about the connection that you have, well, with his father. You've had an amazing run, and it's continuing, Dave Checkett. So, congratulations not only on your past, but now the future that includes a very exciting part for you as you are part of this new effort, Cynosure Checkett Sports Capital Fund. It's going to make a huge difference in the sports landscape. I am honored to have you on the show. Continued success.
Thank you, Doug. Great being with you, and all the best going forward.
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can hear all the past shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Special thanks going out to NBA TV and ESPN for those clips used during the show. And special thanks to Joe Favorito for hooking us up with Dave Checkitz. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.